All right, guys, welcome back to episode 23 of Dialed In with Jake and Zach. And it's going to be a short and sweet on the episode portion of it because the UNC-Duke game's playing and Zach's got to get back to it. So we're going to hear from our friends here at Law Chevrolet, and we're going to get right into episode number 23.
Hey, guys, it's Dylan here at Law Chevrolet Buick. Man, what an amazing year it was. 2018 was truly awesome. The support that we had from our drag racing community was tremendous. Whether it was coming and purchasing a vehicle from us or sending somebody in that you knew or even making sure that you got your service work done here. Guys, we truly appreciate that. With that being said, we're going to continue what we did in 2018. If you're part of our drag racing community and you come and purchase a vehicle from us, we're going to give you $600 on a Visa gift card. It could be used for whatever you want it to be used for. If you're like me, that's some buyback money. So like I said, we appreciate everything you guys have done for us in 2018. Let's make 2019 a great year again. So make sure to give me a call here at 812-897-2220 or just visit lawchevy.com. We'd be glad to take care of you guys. Thank you.
Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
All right, welcome everybody. Episode 23 of Dialed In. 23, great number. Michael Jordan wore that number many years. As those of you have probably listened know, I'm a definitely an unapologetic Carolina Tar Heels men's basketball fan. Jordan is obviously the most famous alumni and player. I was just looking up, they won the 1982 national championship with Jordan on the team. Crazy statistics that I saw earlier posted on Facebook that, and this just shows how intense the rivalry is and how close it's been over the years between Carolina and Duke, that since the 76-77 season, so we're talking 41 years, the Carolina wins leads the series 52-51 over Duke. Now get this, this is even crazier. Total points scored, Duke leads Carolina in that amount of time by 3. 7,988 points for Duke, 7,985 points for Carolina in that matchup over that time. So I know everybody tuned in to hear some college basketball talk, but I'm into it. So it's I just thought that was crazy. I love those crazy statistics. So what's going on, Jake?
Oh, not a whole lot. We're just kind of hanging out and waiting on the racing season to start, really. Doing a little bit of work on the Camaro I picked up last weekend and kind of passing the time pretty quickly. I took a break tonight to hang out with you.
Sweet. Well, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, new ride. So I'm sure that'll be, you're going to make your debut in that thing, or are you just going to sell it?
No. Because I don't know if pretty much anybody that listens to this podcast knows what's going to happen if I take it to a racetrack. We're going to put the motor transmission in it if that's, you know, how somebody wants it. It's available roller or turnkey. And I'll start it in the garage and drive it into whoever's trailer, or they can drive it. I really don't care. But, you know, that's about all the further I'm going with it.
I gotcha. Well, and we're getting ready ourselves. I got the engine started this last weekend, so that was exciting. You know, made some noise out in the garage. Siebert carburetor worked awesome. You know, so it's fast approaching. I was sitting here thinking about it, and it's now less than 2 weeks that I'm planning on being on a racetrack. So we will see. Hopefully the weather agrees by then. I know that it's been kind of crazy here in the Midwest. Lots of rain and cold still. So we'll see how that all plays out. But yeah, race season is fast approaching, and I am very anxious for it. Been keeping up with this is Brack Racing's got their off-season practice tree challenge going on right now. I think they're doing the bottom bowl portion. So I just wanted to direct any of our listeners that might be interested in that to check it out. They got some really good stuff on there. I know the top bowl portion will be coming up soon. So as far as race results, really don't have any this week.
But hold on a minute. Did you see the bracket cars down at Lights Out?
Oh, yeah, Lights Out. There was a little race down there, wasn't there, in Valdosta? I did.
I'm not talking about, like, Open Comp or 6.0 Index. Kevin Rivenbark probably could have dialed 360 one or two and been, you know, low teen or high 20 total. And Alex Laughlin could have probably dialed him a 369, and you know he could have been double low pack in the final round of Radio versus the World.
Yeah, it's, what they're doing with those cars is just mind boggling. Every time I watch them, I can't believe it. I'm very anxious. I plan on going to the race they're having in Bowling Green when they're having the bracket deal too, and I can't wait to see those cars in person. You know what? What was the guy's name? Was Tim Slavin in that Camaro? What he was doing was
stock wheelbase Camaro. Yeah.
Yeah, running low 360s was just nasty. But shout out to Alex Laughlin and a great final round, taking the win and being double O on the tree and just being the great driver that we know that he is. But shout out Osby Brewington. He won 6-0. And when I was watching the time trials, I definitely would have bet $100 on him watching those 6.0 time trials. He had it well under control from the get go. So that's good, making the bracket racers and the 90 racers look good down there. So
yeah, shout out. Yeah, Kenny Hebert or however everybody wants to say his last name took the Mini Cooper to the win in Open Comp. Yeah,
and that's an awesome car.
Oh man, and that used to be on a VW Beetle body sitting on top of that chassis. And I don't know if you looked at it. I don't think you did it. It wasn't at the million this year. I think it was a couple of years ago. And you know, if that thing sprung an oil leak, it would push the body off the top of the engine. You know, it's that tight down in there. I'm pretty sure he takes the body off the car just to get the engine out. But it's a big block 540 stuffed down in a Mini Cooper. So I'm not sure how much Crisco is involved for that to happen. But it's stock worthy for sure. And a little shout out to my buddy Steve from Icon Pistons. He was putting a Scion into the beams in Open Comp and found out exactly how sticky the starting line was just as the camera flipped to him. So Icon Steve, over there thinking about the backside that hit the asphalt whenever your shoes left you left the racetrack and your shoes didn't. So
yeah, what a surface that they had down there. You know, you see what these cars can do on a radial tire, and then definitely has a big part of it is how well that track is prepared. If anybody hasn't seen the video Jake's talking about, I think I posted on my Facebook page. So just scroll down and check it out, where it gets his shoes pulled off, or that's the guy with the Mustang backed into him, wasn't it?
No, he was just being funny and putting an Open Comp guy that's driving one of those Scion toasters in the beams, and he fell backwards. Yeah, and the guy did get ran over with the Mustang. That was that's something that you definitely need to be woke to if you're going to go play on the starting line down there. And that's something that should really worry people, that, you know, when they have those big crowds on the starting line for big rounds and stuff, that, you know, that's you can't play in that sandbox too long before it's going to bite you.
Yep, that's for sure. And of course, you know, like we talked about, but they didn't listen to us. There was a crowd of people on a starting line. Luckily, nothing bad happened, and it was a great show. So love the coverage of it. And I just like that you can watch drag racing online all the time now. It's just it's a great day and age to be into drag racing and be a fan too, to be able to see all that coverage. So yeah, Lights Out was great, man. Do want to pass along information I saw. I know by the time that this probably gets out, everybody would have been headed there already anyway, but Super 7 Series is rain/flooded out for this weekend at Montgomery Motorsports Park. I think they made the right decision by canceling it early, you know, nobody getting on the way. They said, you know, not only is part of the pits are flooded, the track is flooded, so Mother Nature just says no right now. So, but looks like they got a great series planned down there for this year for the Super 7 Series. And then what do you think about, I saw the flyer released today at Bowling Green, changing up the 10 tuck format again with and doing away with the little race, but the big race is a little bit cheaper to get in. So how do you feel about that?
You know, I made my first 10 tuck appearance this past year, and I'd never been to one before that, and I thought, you know, hey, this is actually a pretty neat format. And, you know, let lo and behold, it was the last March race at 10 tuck that I'd ever have. So the 10 G's at BG was born, and it doesn't look like too bad of a format, really. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, but, you know, it looks like also there's going to be some time to go to the amusement park afterward.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've always liked about those races, too, is even with a little race, you know, they get things rolling. You know, you're usually done at a decent time and have some time to recoup for the next day. You know, I like to, that Sunday, I saw that on the flyer, no time trials unless you're a new entry. So, you know, I think that's a good deal, too. By that time, you know, let's just put them in the beams and go. You know, there's no point in wearing the stuff out any more than we have to, the way I look at it. So, but yeah, it looks like a good format. You know, still looks like I think it's going to be well attended. And, you know, I like the fact that, you know, I thought it they cut the price down if you ran the whole weekend last year, but now they've cut the price down for each day, which I like better because, you know, you can't always get off work on Friday, you know, to make it down. So I like, you know, being able to have a little bit cheaper entry going on Saturday and Sunday. It's probably work out pretty good for me. So planning on making some trips down there for sure. So
Where it is not raining or really does not matter is the practice right. Tree Hootenanny. It's coming up this weekend. It's the last time that you have to hear Guy LaDouche's voice come across the airwaves. I've dialed in for just a little bit anyway. He's going to and a big props to him. He secured the announcing job at America's Racetrack, Summit Motorsports Park. But anyway, nonetheless, the practice tree Hootenanny kicking off this weekend in North Central Ohio. And we're going to hear from them just for a minute. We'll be right back with our interview with the local legend here with Zach and I guess we could say it's our local legend and more Zach than I, but you know, I've got to be really close to Jimmy and his family, and he's done a lot of work and helped me out. So yeah, we'll be right back after a word from the practice tree Hootenanny.
Saturday, February 23rd, the return of the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing, featuring the best and baddest practice tree drag racing on this side of the Mississippi. The Loose Rocker Promotions Animal Eliminator, guaranteeing $3,000 to the winner and a free weekend entry to the St. Patrick's Classic at Virginia Motorsports Park. The Adams Racing Big Dog Shootout makes its debut, giving away a K&N Spring Fling Million Weekend Package valued at over $2,600 to the winner in the 64-entry field. For the Bottom Bulbers, the World Footbreak Challenge Bottom Bulb Blitz makes its return with a $1,000 payday going to the last man standing and a weekend entry to the World Footbreak Challenge at Bristol Dragway. 782 Township Road 101 in West Salem, Ohio, just 3 miles south of Dragway 42. Gates open at 1, racing at 4. Come on back to the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing. Be there!
So on the phone with us today is not going to be a good interview, but an absolutely great interview. A two-time Super Pro Track champion, one time at Chandler Motorsports Park, or the former Chandler Motorsports Park, and most recently 2018 at Excel Quarter Raceway in Harrisburg, Illinois. He's won a Quick 16 championship at Chandler, Pro Track championship at Chandler, and it goes up for auction here coming up. It's going to be the Kahuni Motorsports Park. It's still going to be CMP, but how about four-time Super Pro point runner-up, two at Chandler, two at Windy. The most important part is it's Lauren's dad. And Jennifer's husband and fabricator extraordinaire, as Zach has it put right here, Kahuni Consultants. And this little tidbit here that he's very well famous for.
Jimmy came to play, has 15 in the bank on Cool Hand Luke, and gonna take him out. How about a one foul package? 001 dead zero, Bogacki 16 dead five.
So, one total 20 behind.
So well, that in the million of what, 2017?
2016, I believe. I don't remember. 2016? I'd have to go back look at some medical records, you know what I'm saying? it was not a good year.
Yeah, and Luke Bogacki knew you were there, buddy. How's it going?
Well, you know, I rubbed my hands together when Dave looked back and said, tell me who I had, and I rubbed my hands together and I had that look, and Dave said, oh, I knew he was done. And I said, well, I came there to prove a point, and I didn't realize I was going to do it first round, but I said, I've got enough money to buy back, and I'm going to run this thing out the back, and I'm going to go dead on, and I'm going to be good on the tree. And I was all of those. Amazingly enough, I pulled that off.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, you know, you don't overcomplicate bracket racing. I think that you've shown that works really, really well 98% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, keep the same combination, pretty much the same combination for 25 years or at least 20 years, you know, get 800 or 900 runs out of your tires, and you know, just go weekly and try to not suck when you put it in the beams. And that's pretty easy to do if you got your head in the game. But if you don't have your head in the game and you're out, you know, thinking things that are going on at home or things that are going on at the trailer or you know, this or that, or you know, most of the time I have the ability to shut all that off, and you know, I have a checklist I go over as I'm rolling in the water box. And I'm on the other side of the water, it's just quit thinking and do what you're trained to do. And it's worked out okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay is the word for it. I run through the water box and just hope it stays together for 600 feet. I can coast 60, no problem.
And it's worked out for Jimmy quite well in the other lane for me many years. I can tell you that for sure. We've had our share of battles and loved every minute of it. So, man, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I know that Jake and I, you know, we know about your racing history. I've been racing with you for a while, but just kind of give our listeners the overview of how you got into racing and how you got to where you are now.
Oh, hey, and before you get into that, make sure in the end of this you include how you ruined my chance at a Super Pro Championship at all these that you've won. You haven't let me win. So go ahead.
Okay. So I guess it started out, you know, leaving court, you know, for driving too fast on the road. And a friend of mine's like, hey, we're going to go to the racetrack this weekend. You want to come? That's Troy. Went there with Troy and helped him kind of keep things going, you know, not the best equipment and, you know, working on it in between rounds. And that was the selling point for me. Hey, this is really fun. I could do this. And then I don't know, 6 years later, I finally got a wind light. You know, I really literally stunk at it and nobody would help me because back in the day you figured it out and you figured it out by getting beat on and what can I do to improve and this and that, you know, it took me a while to figure it out. But once I figured it out, then I figured out that, you know, I can do this if I get my mind in the game and, you know, I quit getting speeding tickets when I went to the racetrack and got all that aggression out at the racetrack.
So. Yep, good way to help the pocketbook as well, not getting so many tickets and getting in trouble. And so when did the first ride, was that the Instigator?
No, actually the first ride was a 78 Camaro and it was only for one season. It was a former member of my family's back and forth to work car and it was causing a little bit of overheating problem with a camshaft I chose. So I took that and took that motor back out, put her a little small motor in there and put that motor in an old Monte Carlo that I bought that turned into the Instigator, which is probably the source of it all. Once I put the trailer in the mix, it was all in after that. You know, I used to drive it to the track and pull, you know, open the trunk and put the slicks on and put the air can out to the side and flip out the chairs and, you know, toolbox and had all that stuff. And once I bought a trailer, it was all racing after that.
Yeah. And you know, you've came quite a long way since those days to what you put in your trailer these days, but you know, you've done it for quite a long time. And what makes you want to keep doing it? You know, whenever you wake up on a Friday or Saturday morning and say, all right, let's do this. You know, what keeps you going?
Well, honestly, I still really get fired up about going. I still get fired up about winning rounds. You know, every round at the racetracks I go to, and Zach can attest to this. If you know Chandler for years and Excel a quarter now and Beach Bend when I go there and you know the Friday nights I can get away when I go to Hardinsburg. I'm telling you right now, they're some of the toughest racers around. And if you can win there, you can win anywhere. So, you know, I tried not to pull in the lanes wrong. You know, when it's your night and you can tell when it's my night, when I think it's my night anyway, because I'll be the first car in either lane, whatever lane I decide to run that night, I'll be the first car in the lanes. And that's when I feel like I've got as good a chance as anybody there. Now, you know, if I'm back in the pack a little bit, maybe I'm not feeling like I got the best chance, but I have pretty good equipment. So sometimes that car carries me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. When I see you up front, I usually am the last pair down the racetrack, just so you know.
Funny story. I won't mention any names. A guy that used to race at Lions that came to Chandler, I think is an Adam. His initials are Adam Phillips. Anyway, I drive up the lanes and I'm in the right lane at Chandler and I pull up and I'm always the first one or two cars. And Adam pulls around and he's in the left lane and he pulls up right beside me. And I'm like, okay, well, this, you know, I don't know this guy, but he's pretty good. You know, he just came from a track championship at Lions and I don't know, he's 10 pack, I'm 6 pack, felt pretty good about it, come back, he buys back, we go right up back there,
yep.
Exact same that's position.
That's the most Adam Phillips thing I've ever heard.
Oh, he pulls up beside me. again, and I'm 5-pack. He's 12-pack. So the next weekend, he pulls up, and I'm pulling in my normal thing, and he stops at the concession stand and lets a couple of cars dive in there. He's 2-3 cars back in the other lane, and I went back and I said, "What's the matter, buddy? You didn't want to try that again?" And he said, "No, I think you taught me a lesson last week." And I was like, "Well, I was just on last week, and I at any given time I can be beat. I'm telling you, you got there on a bad night. You know, today might be your day." And so, no, we laughed about that for quite a few years, but I have a lot of respect for Adam because he has strapped it on me time and time again. But that one day I was king for a couple of rounds there.
And going back to a good Chandler story, and Jimmy remembers this, I do, because it was one of the few times I got to drive my dad's car, and Jimmy was up there first in the lanes, and nobody would pull up there, and just nobody wanted to race him. It was completely empty on that side, and he sat up there by himself to the point where I think Jonathan Smitty got on the mic and said, "Is anybody going to come up here and race Jimmy?" Yeah, and I fired up the Ace of Spades and went up there. I said, "I'm not going to sit here any longer." Once he said that, I was like, "Man, that's a challenge. I got to go."
Yeah. I jumped up there. I think you beat me too, didn't you?
I did beat you that round, but that was one of the few times it's happened. But I did get you that time. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Going into the next question, Kahuni, the nickname that we all know you as, where did that come from? Where did it first originate? Because I don't know that story.
There's a story there. If anybody that knows Bob Harper, he's old. He was an old, hard-headed old man, and God love him, full of knowledge, great person, loved him to death. He could not pronounce my last name, and he called me Jimmy Cahoon. And then he had a name for everybody, and it was your name and the male member. So I was Kahuni that, and it went from that to everybody to call me Kahuni because Bob Harper gave me that nickname, and that name has stuck. I've had people think that my last name was Cahoon, and it's not. It's Terhune. It doesn't even sound nothing like it, but Mr. Harper had a hard time pronouncing Terhune, and it came out Kahuni. So that's where it came from, and a lot of people don't know that, but that's where mm-hmm. it came from.
That's awesome. Yeah, and Mr. Harper was a great guy. There was when I was running junior dragsters, and he was selling fuel at the track. Just a testament to what type of guy this is. I never paid for alcohol to go on my junior dragster at Chandler, ever. He would not accept money for the alcohol for my junior dragster. He just wouldn't do it. So that's just what type of guy that Bob Senior was. And we always had that's one thing I miss bad about Chandler is having the Bob Harper Senior Memorial Race. I thought of, the people that have deserved a memorial race. He definitely is at the top of the list. So yeah, for sure. Sorry, Jake.
Oh, that's all right. So Jimmy, in your young 50, whatever you are, 29, however old you are, can you still do a handstand?
I can do a handstand, but the problem with the handstands are, I'm worried that one of these days I'm going to have a bad fall and I'm going to break a hip, and I don't want to break a hip. I'm 52 years old. I'm a man of a certain age, and I'm 5 years from retiring from my job, and of course I'm going to still do something. I would hope to maybe weld on race cars in my garage, because that is actually not that I love welding, but I do like working on cars. I like working on race cars, especially race cars, because there's nothing really there's a bunch of computer related anyway. I can work on race cars in my garage, and it's pretty easy, to have a passion for that when you love doing that, and they're easier to work on in the garage than they are at the racetrack. So hopefully I can retire and draw my carpenter retirement and build race cars in my garage.
Yeah, and we're gonna pray for the day that you and Paco are both retire, that Jennifer and Angie don't go nuts, because
guaranteed
that's gonna be a long day. But yeah, the whole handstand thing. Whenever we all planned to go to the Million, you said, "I'm going to the Million. I'm doing a handstand right there." And there's a picture of that.
Yeah, and I did it. I did it. There's a picture somewhere.
that might just be our episode cover photo, but
that was the thing about the handstands was when I was really going rounds, and I'm very superstitious, or I used to really be. I'm not near as bad as I used to be, but I would do every time I would win a round, I'd get out and I'd do a handstand. And in the early days of the Monte Carlo, when it was before it was the Instigator, it was just a chocolate brown hunk of race car. you know, I ran heavy or pro and trophy, and I would win around and I'd get back and do a handstand, and they call us in the lanes and I'd do a handstand. I'd jump in a car and run back up there. You know, I was doing my best to try to, you know, and that just, I was so amped up about it because I am so, and I still am that passionate about it because, you know, where else can you go and just run the snot out of your car and be in a crowd of people that for the most part, I'm going to say 90% of the people at that racetrack are really nice guys and will do anything, will give you the shirt off their back. And I feel like I'm the same way. I would do anything for anybody that I am friends with. And you got to really make me mad for me still not to help you and when something goes bad. So, you know, I don't know. It just, I really still get up for the competition of it all and the actual running my car down the racetrack. And, you know, I've been building for a long time and I finally got good equipment. I've had good equipment for the last 15 years. And, you know, it's done. It's treated me well. It's treated me well.
So pretty much all you can attribute your late success or your early on success would be you do a handstand before you get in the car and your opponent's thinking he's running against somebody from Ringling Brothers.
Yeah, this guy's nuts. What's he doing? Oh, my God, I got to see this. If he can get in the head lightheaded and cut a light, I'll give him the win. Well, I hate to tell you guys, but, you know, I was a hyper individual back in the day. And I'm not near as bad as I used to be. But, you know, back when I was in my prime 20s and 30s, you know, I would jump out of the truck and hey everybody, you know, and I would do a handstand for every round I won.
Well, I've seen you on the chip lately. You haven't lost too much of that if you're in the correct mood for it. So
yeah, you're right.
So you know, beyond your special abilities of doing a handstand, I've been witness to this several times. How long can you hold a wheelie on a scooter?
Well, if it's the right scooter, I can go 800 feet in each direction. So I kind of get bored with it. When you get past the finish line and you get down past the junior drags return road, you kind of bored with it because there's really nobody watching. So you set it down, turn around and come back up the return road. Used to drive Bobby Harper nuts because he couldn't do it. I could do it all the way. And I would do that between the last time trying National Anthem. So I would go because I wasn't running Super Pro then. So I would get on my scooter and I would ride a wheelie all the way down the racetrack. And then I would turn around and ride all the way back. And then I'd drive back to the pits and everybody's like, I can't believe you could do. Well, it's easy to do when you've got a real weak Honda Spree that won't hardly pull itself. Get it up on teeter. And if you can keep your foot up on the you know, the little flat area there and not have it dragging like a rookie, that really impresses people. And that's, you know, that's kind of what I was out for.
Go ahead, Zach.
All right. So, you know, you are definitely a part of a racing family. And, you know, your wife, Jennifer, is quite the accomplished racer, along with your daughter, Lauren. So are you Jennifer or Lauren?
I'm going to have to give it to Jennifer because Jennifer can
cool as a cucumber.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And then some. She will. And I don't know if y'all have been to the door car race when she's there, but you put her and Bree Zimmerman helping her in the situation where there's big money up for grabs and the woman is on a mission. And of course, I can be as serious as anybody, but I just don't like to be. And Jennifer, when she is on, you might as well just go ahead and park it in the trailer because she's going to put it there. You know, she didn't have the nicest equipment. And I'm not saying that I was a big part of it, but I you know, we put together a pretty good little combination. And, you know, that motor's been pretty good, and the car's actually been pretty good, but you know, it's had a couple of different renovations over the last few years, but you know, that car is really good. I went to race and Lauren had cheer practice or something late, and Jennifer couldn't go, and I said, you know, it's hot out, I'm not even gonna unload my dragster, I don't have the patience or I just don't want to mess with it, I'll just run the dart. Well, Jennifer had won the week before in the dart pretty convincingly too. She had some pretty tough customers, and she said, well, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to give you a hard time or nothing, but the last time I was there, I won. And I was like, well, la-ti-da. So I pulled out of the driveway and I was like, I'm going to win this thing tonight, or I'm just going to stay gone for a couple of days because I'm not going to be able to face her if I don't come home winning. So I did it. I pulled it off and We have a picture. I don't know what it was on the web, on the page. It's like her winter circle picture was like the 7th of June, and she's pointed one way, and mine was the 14th of June, and I'm pointed the other way, and I'm in her picture, and she's not in mine. So she was at home doing cheer mom stuff, and you know, which she does that a lot, and she lets me go probably a lot more than I should. You know, I should probably stay and do the cheer dad stuff, but Jennifer knows that, you know, that's a pretty important thing to me. And she doesn't, you know, she doesn't stand in the way. She takes care of Lauren whenever Lauren has stuff she has to do during racing and lets me go. But, you know, I think this year we might have to trade up a little bit where she gets to go a little more because I had a pretty good year and she deserves to have that same kind of a year, you know. So I might take the back seat every now and then, let her go do her thing. So you know, don't get me wrong. Lauren's tough too, but Lauren has so much attitude going on in that little head. You got to make her mad to really get it out of her. You know, I've been doing it so long, it's second nature. Lauren like gets in the car and she feels like she's got something to prove. And, you know, if she's having a bad day, you know, I could fire up and I'm like, you know, she was getting on me about one thing or another. I didn't do this right or I didn't do that right. And I said, listen, baby, you're in control of this car. All I'm going to do is start it up and turn the idle to the right place. You put in the beams and you do your thing. I'm not doing anything but starting it and making sure that that thing runs when it comes to the starting line. And that's all I'm going to do. Everything else is up to you. And I don't shed a bad light, and she came back and she tried to blame it on me, and I was like, what, was I standing behind you or something? I, you know, so she was mad, and then the very next pass she goes up there and she's like 20 total, and I'm like, see, now that is the girl that I need to see in that car every weekend. So, you know,
I'm pretty sure my kid was in the other lane.
Yeah, she's outgrown her car, so she's gonna do a little bit of she might do a little bit of the street trophy class in mommy's Equinox or dad's dually. It's got a tuner, it'll run, so I'm not really sure what she's gonna drive, but she's gonna drive. They've got a class that she can race in if me or mom is in the passenger seat, and we're gonna let her take a shot at that when she can.
Speaking of dad's dually, has it ever made it through a ditch or a median with a trailer attached?
Not through a median, but it did go in and out of a ditch.
I forget where were you headed?
I was headed to Chandler and we're going up Highway 60 and somebody pulls in front of me, which wasn't the problem. I was going, you know, there was enough time for them to pull in front of me and I'm rolling up the hill. So I'm, you know, I roll back into throttle and then they decide immediately slam on the brakes to turn left. And it was lock up the brakes. Oh boy, I'm going to hit her. And I wasn't going to hit her hard, but I was going to hit her. We were going to get to know each other and I didn't really want to do that. So I chose to turn right and go into what was kind of a ditch, not really a ditch, but I put her in there and I'm, of course, I'm using language that I shouldn't in front of my child and my child is freaking out. And I put it in reverse and backed right back out of the ditch. And this lady had no idea what had just happened beside her. One of the guys that was following me, I run into him a couple of days later and he's like, oh my God, I saw the trailer lock up and I didn't know what was happening. And then all of a sudden you jump to the right and I knew you were in trouble. And I said, yeah, I was in trouble. That lady just, she wanted to go to a yard sale and she saw a yard sale sign and she stopped. There was room for her to pull in there, but she stopped dead in front of me. And I got it almost all the way. I slowed down to about 15 mile an hour before I turned it to the right and put her in the ditch because I did not want to get to know that lady. yeah, that was, we've had some experiences. I'm usually, since then, I'm usually laid back and a little further back in traffic. And if somebody pulls out in front of me, pretty far up, I'm laying back. You know, I don't want to do that ever again.
I think you rolled into the racetrack and you still were on the chip pretty well about it.
Oh, I was mad. I've always been an emotional guy. I don't try not to wear my emotions on my sleeve, but boy, when I've had a bad day, I've had a bad day. And you know, there's a couple of people that can tell you about my trip to the million. Don't remember what year it is. I'd have to go and look at the date on the big circle on the side of Dave's new trailer, which was my old trailer when I got hit by a semi going down there. He was texting or I'm not sure what he was doing, but he was not staying in his lane and just bonk hit the side of my trailer, put two big 24 inch or 28 inch big black donuts the side of my trailer, ripped my awning off, didn't want to stop. I had to chase him down I was pretty upset and I get there and one of my really good friends, if you're listening, buddy, I love you to death. He said, slow down, my dog's out here, and that did not go well. So that. So we've since hugged it out. You know, we didn't go to the dirt, but that's because his head was cooler than mine, and I was wearing flip flops instead of tennis shoes. So I try not to be a hothead, but I was a hothead that day for sure.
So you know, bringing it back down to the kind of the personal side of things, and you know, life kind of put on hold in December of 2015, and racing went on a hold. You know, it became a small part of your life, and you know, you kind of took a step back, and you know, you and I have had conversations about, you know, what you were kind of going through and what you were kind of thinking. But how awesome was it to get back in the race car after you kicked cancer right in the planetary?
Well, I mean, honestly though, guys, did you really think that I was just going to lay down and take that?
No.
I fortunately, I've had some really good doctors in my life, and especially in the last few years, I've had some pretty good outcome over that. You know, getting that little dose of reality in 2015 was not something that was in the picture, and you know, that was a bad winter. And I decided that I was going to stick around and regrow my hair and let everybody see me with curly hair. And it came back curly, and it came back with a vengeance. But I can get haircuts on a regular basis again. That was to finally put that aside and get in the race car and go down the racetrack, and just to show up at the racetrack and how everybody embraced me was really, really humbling. You know, cancer doesn't care who you are, you know, and cancer will, you know, it'll get the best of you if you let it. But I'm a firm believer in the power of God, the power of prayer, and the power of positive thinking. And that was the moment when I became a different person. And I don't know if I know that a few people have mentioned that to me, and that makes me feel better about myself, because, you know, I used to be not as nice a guy to be around. You know, my friends were my friends and my enemies were my enemies. And there was no distinct, you know, there was no everybody knew the difference. And, you know, life has definitely shown me that it's shorter than I'd like it to be. And I need to maybe change my way of thinking. And I had probably, I don't know, 1,000 friends, and I guarantee I've got 4,000 or 5,000 friends now because of it. So, you know, it's made me a better person. You know, but it was good to go back to the racetrack and go down that racetrack. And the first win after was, you know, I wanted to so bad put a post, take that, Mr. Cancer, but you know, I'm a firm believer in karma, and that's just not the thing to do.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of those things that, you know, whenever it came to fruition that, you know, that's what was going on, and you know, and nobody had your back like your wife did. You know, she was at every appointment with you, she took you to every meeting. But the world of social media, it seems like in our area, just dropped what they were doing. You know, it was what can we do to help Jimmy, what's Jimmy need, you know?
And the
practice tree race was nuts. I mean, there was like, I don't know how many shirts given that we all bought, but you know, then that's reasons like that are why we do this.
You know, that was a very, that whole situation was humbling from start to present. You know, when I see somebody that bought a t-shirt to help me pay a medical bill that was, you know, if nobody's ever gone through that, I'll promise you this much. If I didn't have good insurance, I would be dead, because there's no way that I could shoulder that, you know, that burden on my own. And thankfully, years ago, I got into the Carpenters local, and we have good insurance. And because of our good insurance, I was able to get the treatments that I needed. You know, that was very, very humbling for everybody to, because, you know, there's still quite a bit of out-of-pocket expense, and nobody wanted me to be out. Nobody wanted me to be down and out. Everybody wanted me to not struggle. And because of everybody, I was able to pay our side of the out of pocket. And you're right. That was all Jennifer. You know, Jennifer has had a pretty rough life from 16 to, you know, her mom got cancer.
She met you, you know.
Yeah. Things were getting good until she, you know, when she met me. And then we had 14 or 13 good years. And then we had one really, really bad one. So, you know, 2015 or whatever year it was, I asked her, I try to shut that part of it out. But I tell everybody, you know, they say to, you know, you're supposed to get your prostate blood counts checked when you're 50. And I would have been dead for a year. So, you know, because they gave me less than a year to live if I didn't do anything at all. So my doctor really got my attention when he said, you know, this is serious. And, you know, I was devastated. And, you know, Jennifer was a big part of me pulling through that. I tell everybody that, you know, Jennifer has been through it so much. She knew exactly what to do, what to say. And, she knows me well enough to know how to talk to me, how to get me to react, how to get me to do things. You know, I didn't want to accept it. I didn't want to accept that my life was changing, that I needed to change this. I needed to change my diet. I needed to change all these things. And, you know, Jennifer is very tenacious, very stubborn.
What I'm coming to mind here is hell hath no fury like her determined.
When she gets, I guarantee it. When she's determined, she will flat show you what it's all about. And like, I needed that. I needed that. And she knew that, you know, God blessed me the day that I met her, and I'm thankful for her to be in my life.
So switching back, and that's an amazing, you know, and a great story. Man, I tell you, it was a crazy to see. And I mean, not crazy, I guess is the wrong word, but I mean, just it was great to see just the support of the racing community through that whole deal, you know, and I've seen it, and we've seen it with other people too, and it just shows that I'm a firm believer that racers are some of the best people on earth, you know, and absolutely, it's one of the great part, you know, reasons to be a part of this is just to be around all these good people, just like you said, that are literally, you know, take the shirt off their back for you, let you drive their car, or let you take whatever parts you need. You know, I know I've borrowed parts from Jimmy. I know he's borrowed parts from me and Dad and whoever. You know, that's just how it worked. But
can I add a funny story? Let's add the story to the Billy Schlump story, mm-hmm, to of Jennifer's dad. You know, Duke was a great guy. Would do anything for anybody. You know, back in the days when the fad was to have a car dolly, you know, if you were rich, you had an open trailer, and Duke had a car dolly, and Zach's dad tore his car up and
wrecked it.
Mm-hmm. Duke loaned him his car dolly so he could pull his car home, and said, hey, you know, we'll just hook up and you know, get it back. I'll put the mufflers back on mine and drive it home. And Duke did that. Years later, you know, Duke went to have an engine balanced. And when he went there to pick it up, your dad handed him the stuff. And he said, what's my bill? And he said, you don't have a bill. And explained to him that he helped him back in whatever year it was. Don't know what year it was. I wish I did, because it was a really good story. And about two great men and how they had mutual respect for each other and how just respect for humanity. Everybody helping each other out, and how it shines through, because Jennifer's dad was a good man, and he helped your dad out when he was down and out, and your dad helped him out when he was down and out, and it was really, really good to see. Then again, I've always been a fan of your dad's. Some of the best racing I've ever had, 1 or 2,000 finishes every single time we raced. It's crazy. I don't mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but it's the name. I guarantee it's the name, because if it's a Schlump in the other lane, I have to be the Jimmy that is the best he can be.
I appreciate you saying that, man. That means a lot. And that's one of the first stories, for one of the first racing stories I remember my dad telling me, was about Duke loaning him that car dolly to take his car home after he had wrecked it. And it was I would have had to been I don't know the exact year, I'll have to ask Dad, but probably late 60s, I would imagine. And that many years later, you know, of course Dad was happy to repay it. So yeah, that's a great story. I'm glad you brought that up. So switching back to a little bit lighter thing, you know, this is a question I ask all the guests on here, and that we're at you know, interested to know. And what is your go-to race day meal? Do you have anything that you usually like to eat on race day?
No, I don't. You know, for years I wouldn't eat on race day. You know, I would avoid food all day, you know, and if I did eat, it was something really light. And, you know, just from nerves, I had a hard time keeping things down, but then, you know, I quit smoking in 2010, and I figured out that I really like to eat. So, you know, I quit that whole thing, and I would love to get a track cheeseburger. You know, we had really good cheeseburgers at Windy Hollow, and hot dogs, of course, but my doctor has told me to avoid red meat. So, you know, I don't really have it'll be some. So I really don't have a meal that I go to.
So we're not going to get into the in-depth discussion of Chandler at the moment, but with places like Chandler closing and Windy Hollow closing and Bracket Racing is doing what it is doing right now in its current day and age, how do you feel about the state of Bracket Racing as we know it right now? You know, we've got, you know, opinions from everybody from each end of the spectrum, guys that do it for the living and guys that do it quite often, and you stay around home a heck of a lot more. But you know, what have you seen it do to the racers and the tracks alike?
Well, so the local track, of course, everybody knows that circus that's going on right now. If you don't, then you're hiding under a rock. You know, the local tracks closing down makes us, you know, we have to travel a little bit. You know, Harrisburg is my now home track, which is an hour and 20 minutes away on a good day. You know, Bowling Green is an hour and 35 minutes usually for me. I mean, realistically, hour and 40 minutes. You know, you probably wouldn't want to get in front of me if I make an hour and 25 minutes. So, you know, the state of bracket racing is, it's all pretty much, if you're not a local racer, you know, your weekly program, to support it, you know, Harrisburg gets a pretty good turnout and, you know, they get a lot of support there and that program's okay. You know, he's not getting rich by no means. He's getting by, but the bracket racing as a whole, it, you know, the big bracket races is, you know, the big money, events is the, you know, that's going to be the only thing that's going to be around. I'm afraid. I don't want it to be, you know, I went through a phase there where I said, I'm not going to race, local anymore. I'm going to try to race 5 granders, at least, you know, 10 granders. And, you know, financially, I just can't do that with, 3 race cars. You know, it's not fair if I go by myself. I want Jennifer to race, you know, and Lauren race. So, you know, I couldn't do that with it, you know, without actually putting myself in a bind, you know, with house bills and stuff. So, you know, I'm not a well-off person. I do okay, but, the big money bracket racing is going to be all that's left if these guys don't support their, local tracks. You know, like I said, you know, Harrisburg gets a pretty decent crowd on a normal Saturday night, you know, unless the car race is going on or something like that close. Or Tentuck. That Tentuck is, you know, that I'm going to probably run some more Tentuck this year if I can pull it off. But
they kicked that out of the whole program.
Did they?
No more little bucks. It's just the 10 G's at BG.
That's it.
Yeah, yep. But wow. It's cheaper to get in, though.
Well, but. You know, which is fine. If I went down there, I wouldn't specifically go there to run the small race. I would go there to, you know, cause it's the same hitters, no matter what. You know, there'll be 4 or 5 guys that won't enter the big race and enter the little race, which crazy. I mean, I don't pass judgment on anybody on how they run their program, but I think it's funny when a guy won't spend $200 on one race, but he'll spend $100 twice on the smaller race. You know what I'm saying? I don't, it just blows me away when guys do that. Now, you know, I've done both, and I definitely would rather be in the 10 grander once than the 5 grander twice. You know, I there was a time in my life when I had the energy to keep up double entered, you know, but I always had to have 2 cars. And the second one was a F body where it was just a seatbelt. You know, I did pretty well in that car. The big money races, that is the, you know, the thing that I think everybody's going to be doing if they don't come out and support their local racetrack.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree. And the long term is exactly that. You know, if they don't support their local racetrack, they're going to be, you know, having Street Outlaws bracket race for $100,000.
Yeah. That's the new thing. The no prep, you know, arm drop stuff. You know,
prep bracket racing. Yeah. Sounds
no prep,
familiar.
Yeah, well, these guys are going there and watching these no prep, right? Like there's one going to a local track here, and I'm not bashing it because I think it's great for them to open that track back up, and that's breathing a little bit of life into that track. But you know, I'm a bracket racer, so you know, I don't want to see, after all the work that I put into cars of my own, cars of customers that I work on, you know, I don't want to go out there and see somebody's car get bashed in on this, you know, 2 cars hitting and car hitting a guardrail or
easy,
you know, it's just, yeah, it's I don't like to see it. It just tears me up because I know how much time and money and effort went into building that car, and to see that get tore up is just, it blows me away. You know, I just I don't want to see that. But people come out because they want to see. They want to see excitement. They want to see, you know, people ask me, you know, I've been asked this 100 times. Have you ever wrecked? I'm like, well, no, I'm a drag racer. I replace axles when they need to be replaced. And, you know, I don't run half inch studs. And, you know, I try to think smart, you know. Then again, I don't make a whole bunch of horsepower. So, you know, I'm probably not going to tear something up, you know, like some of these other guys would. But, you know, things happen pretty fast in a 490 car, though. So, you know, it can happen.
So, you know, speaking of things getting tore up, have you ever backed over a freshly fabricated, freshly painted dragster body?
I don't know who in the world put the mirrors on my car, but they had them way out of adjustment. You know, and you know what makes me feel good about that? Nothing besides this makes me feel good about that, because I spent all that time building that body for my buddy Jake, and I pulled up in the lanes and I see my, you know, a guy pulled up next to me, and I didn't need to be in that far left lane. I wanted to be in the next lane back. So I back up about 3 foot, and I did. Nobody was behind me when I started backing up.
Two foot backwards and 1 foot up.
Right. I slam over Jake's little car, and I went, oh my God, I've killed somebody. I pull it forward, and I get up and I look, and it's Jake. And Jake says, I can't ever have anything nice. And I said, Jake, I'll pay you for it. I will fix it. I tore it up. I'll fix whatever you do. Just get it fixed, and I will pay the bill. And I got the bill, and I paid for it.
And you know, I've never seen a more perfectly placed four link bracket than right down the center of the fiberglass nose in my dragster. I mean, it didn't hit a bar anywhere. Two inch wide gouge for about 8 inches.
Yeah, chewed a big hole through the nose. I was like, man, a piece of duct tape, and you're back in business.
Yeah, and you know, I was just, you know, we were just talking about, you know, how great of a job you did on it, and you know, how happy I was, and the paint looked perfect. The paint looked great, and you know, I was following, you know, the wise and the elderly. You know, I followed you right to the staging lanes. I'm thinking, hey, if this guy, this lane's good, I'm going the same one with him. And
we're good. Yeah. Well. Yeah, well, you know, that wasn't my best moment. You know, I kind of got in trouble at home on that one. I can't believe you backed up without looking. I was like, man, there was nobody behind me when I pulled up there, and there wasn't enough time for anybody to get behind me. She goes, obviously there was. So, you know, there went.
Man, I could tell you, I had mine about on the chip, I think, right there behind you, but it didn't do any good. Oh, I didn't get mine shut off.
There's no horn. Yeah, there's no horn. You were trying No.
I've got one now.
Oh yeah, the one I've got now
will absolutely get your attention.
I promise you one thing: that will never happen again. Because if I didn't learn anything on that little trip to the bank, I learned that was a, you know, I need not do that again. You know, that was a bad deal. It turned out okay, and I'm glad that Mr. Camp took care of us on that deal and made it not as bad as it could have been. That was, I think, $250 to fix the nose of a car, and that was pretty cheap because he had the materials already. So I thank him for that. Take care of us.
And you know, we can really just blame it on Scott Bailey. Who would put fences behind the water box, you know?
You know, that's exactly what it was. It's Scott Bailey's fault. You know, I hate to put that on him after all these years, but Scott, what were you thinking?
So I guess in layman's terms, we can just say we were innovators of the new format of the staging lanes at I-57.
We didn't really give them an idea which way to go, but we knew we give them an idea that what they had wasn't working.
You know, and you know, hindsight's 20/20. I was glad it was me and it wasn't somebody else. You know, that would have been a lot worse. You know,
yeah, that could have been really bad. And I felt, you know, that's one of them moments when you realize, you know, you think that you are the safest person you can be when you're at the racetrack, because you know there are children everywhere and people walking through the lanes. And you know, I try so hard to be that guy that really pays attention to what he's doing, and that happened so fast, and that made me realize that, you know, before you move at all, you need to look behind you and make sure you're not going to run over some 5-year-old that's coming up to shake your hand because he thinks that you're a good guy. You know, that could have been bad, and you know, I thank the good Lord above that nothing bad happened. It did teach me a lesson. If there's any way for me to learn a lesson, it's when you get in my wallet. That is the lesson.
really stink.
and you know, really, that all goes back to, you know, that won't be that that was the start of really of, you know, that wouldn't be the worst thing to ever happen to one of my race cars.
No, you're right. You're right.
It was all downhill from there.
I saw you bounce that car to the finish, you know, past the finish line, through cutting wires in half and stuff. I don't know, man. Them hardtail cars are a lot of fun, aren't they?
Oh. Yeah. I'll never forget that. That was the same weekend, I think. And that was the weekend I made like 32 laps and made $100.
Yeah. You got your money's worth out of that entry. You did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You were 32 laps, $100 and some wires cut in half. I mean, that was the craziest weekend. I don't know. I don't remember what race that was, but that was a good weekend, except for, I mean, it was an exciting weekend.
Yeah. That was Megabucks like 2013. But, you know, for people at home, you know, what are they talking about? So I-57 used to have one heck of a bump at the right at the finish line in the right lane, and I was in a 220-inch 2004 hardtail race tech spraying it from the water box to the ticket booth. And you know, if the nitrous shut off at the right time, not off the gas at the right time, you know, you could stand under the rear tires once it hopped, and it hopped so hard it pulled the ignition wires into it. Didn't like not at a connector, but like the wire itself was ripped in two. And Paco Dave Mascaro walks over and he's like, hey, you want to start this and get it off the racetrack? And I said, yeah, Paco, I would love to. Could you go ahead and spray some fire down the intake? Because it's not got any. So then we get towed off and find the, I think it was you and Paul Hargis that found the wires ripped.
Yeah. That was bad. I was like, well, these two here got to be connected for it to work.
That went to the crank trigger. Yeah. And I think we actually wrapped them in black tape and ran the next round and came back and fixed it the right way.
Yeah. I'd say you went around with a duct electrical tape together and then came back and fixed it. I remember that. You were on fire that night. I mean, literally. Sparks coming out from underneath the car forever.
We pulled the parachute. That's the weekend.
Yeah. That was the weekend that I thought I was going to show you how I could put two new frame rails in the bottom of that car.
And, you know, I think we're going to the lighter side of the conversation here. But before we get too far into that, you have a knack, I guess, for taking a young racer like, you know, I was back then. I was 18, you know, and you said, hey, you're doing great, but this is really how you should carry yourself. And this is how you should, you know, go about things like this. I was your age once and I was just like that. And, you know, you've got a knack for mentoring younger guys. And, you know, what does that give you? And, you know, what do you get out of that?
Well, you know, when I see a racer act like a total douche, you know, I'm not gonna fit that. Is that PG-13? Anyway,
when I see a
racer act like that, I think, man, why do you have to be like that? You know, you can be cocky, and cocky's okay. I can deal with cocky, but you know, when you just kind of talk down to people and that kind of stuff, you know, I try to be a positive influence on people, and especially younger racers, because, you know, the world needs nicer people. You know, there's enough jacklegs in the world. We don't need any more of those. We need nice people, you know, and you know, to try to, you can't, you know, respect is earned, and you can't just go out there and give somebody respect, you know, but I hate seeing young people act that way or act a bad way. So I try to, you know, help out, and not saying you needed any help, Jay, because you didn't, you know. I do like to be a positive influence. I, you know, one thing back in the day, back in the heyday of Chandler, okay, there was 25 juniors, okay, and there was a little bit of downtime. It rained or something. They were drying the track, and somebody showed me a picture. I think it was Christina Lawyer. I was sitting in a circle of about 15 juniors, and we're all sitting around discussing the finer points of drag racing, and I'm trying to give advice, and, you know, I didn't really know much more than they did, but I did know a few things, and I taught them a few things, and we all laughed and cut up, and it was just a moment with the kids. And, you know, it was a moment to be proud of. When I saw the picture, I thought, oh, wow, I really am a good person.
I can attest to one of the I'm going to tell a story about Jimmy when he tried to give me advice. And but it, I was headed towards an official at Indy. I don't know if you remember this, Jimmy.
I remember.
I was spitting fire. Literally, I was so mad over what had took place. And Jimmy stopped me. And he's like, dude, what? And I told him, what happened. There was an instance where I was 18. I'm pretty sure I was 18 at the time. And and I had been reprimanded for speeding down the return road. And then the next round, when I went slow, a car passed me in the grass going down the return road because I was trying to mind my own business and follow the rules. Anyway, Jimmy stopped me and I told him what happened. He said, okay, do it, but do it cool. And
tell him what's on your mind.
I managed to not get thrown out for life or at all somehow, but yeah, I testify to that. He gave me some advice and probably stopped me to make me and had me take a deep breath for a couple of seconds when I really needed to, because if I'd have went over there right that fast, it might have been worse than what it was. But definitely tested that.
There's no mic. That was gonna be bad.
Right. So on the whole mentoring side, you know, you've kind of taken a lot to Ryan McGeehee right now, and that kid's shown a lot of promise as he, as he's growing. Him and his dad, you know, they put a lot of work into their car and their program. If he's ever in the position to win a points championship, are you going to just smack him right in his mouth?
You know, I'm asking
for a friend, because, you know, I'm just asking.
In that situation, you know, and I'm going to say, Jake, and I didn't realize that was what it was. That was me saying, you know, I really like this guy, but the one thing I'm going to like about him is beating him. And, you know, that was a really good day for me. And it would have been a good day for you, for anybody else in the other lane. But what was it? I think it was 004.
Hold on. I still have the ticket. Nope.
That was quite a round there, but I'm gonna tell you right now, Ryan McGeehee is a bad dude, and he's got that thing figured out. You know, if he's ever in the I will be out of my car and helping the best I can, and definitely avoiding him, because you know, he's a really good racer. He was a good racer in a junior, and he's really a good racer in that Firebird. You know, and I really like Ryan and his dad. You know, I not that I'm taking anybody under my wing, because, you know, he's pretty capable. His dad's pretty capable. But, you know, I just try to be a positive influence on some of these younger guys, because, you know, it's a passion. You know, I love doing this and I want to see it keep going. So, you know, I try to be a positive influence on them for sure. But yeah, Ryan's one of my favorites.
Yeah. And going back to that run, I'm sitting here in the staging lanes at Lions, and there's like a points race and a half left, right? First round, I roll up there and I'm like, oh, I've got Jimmy and he's in the dart, so no big deal. I'll run him down. I'll drive the finish line. Not worried about it. I let go and thought, that's pretty good. I get down through that, I'm like, I might be getting there. Give it one little rip, and I'm 5-1, and I'm behind 2-10 thou, and Jimmy is 1-5. And I buy back, and I roll up in round two, and I'm like, all right, Jimmy's up there, and I don't have to worry about that massacre again. And I'm like, Camaro Costello, they call him 50. You know, surely I can get by this round. Camaro is 000 and 5,000 above. So 11,000 lost me a championship.
And, yeah, there you go.
No, it was probably my only legitimate shot, because the next time I was in that position, I got, you know, kicked out for a month. So,
yeah, well,
that is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, I'll guarantee you one thing. What I always tell everybody is if I beat you in a race like that, it's because I took you serious. And, you know, because, you know, some guys, you go up there and you're thinking, man, I hope this guy don't come in my lane. You know, I've had rounds where I had a guy, you know, drive the center line, and I don't know if he was trying to scare me, but it worked. I didn't let off because I knew that I'd stand a better chance in the throttle than out of the throttle. So I was trying to get away from him, and he was like literally driving the center line. And I was like, I don't know what you're trying to do to me, but you're freaking me out a little bit here. I'm going to give you a couple of whacks at the throttle at the finish line, and hopefully that I'm okay, because I don't think you're okay, and I'm going to make sure that you stay in your lane. But yeah, that was an epic race, to say the least, Jake.
And you know, I would be just as upset if you said, hey man, I knew where you were at the championship. That's why I turned it a few thigh red, I'll buy back. You know, I'd have probably been way more upset over that. If you're going to lose, do it that way.
That's the one thing that I've been in battles, and I'm not going to bring up the past, but there's been a few of those runner ups where, you know, some of the guys got in lanes and made sure that guy that won. So didn't let it get me down. I would have two more championships at Chandler had it not been for that situation. But you know what? I just said, let it all happen the way it's going to happen. I have no control over it. The one situation I had the chance to beat that guy earlier in the night, and I let the nerves get the best of me. I went to the other lane, said, I'll just give him his lane. I'll go over here in the left lane and I will strap it on him. And I was behind the whole way, went back to the trailer, and I thought, well, it's over, you know, unless he gets beat this next round, because I was ahead of him at that point. When he gets beat this next round, then we'll have to do a runoff. Well, he was surrounded by friends, and he was able to get two more rounds and ended up getting the championship. So, you know, it was in my hands for just a little bit there, and I let it slip away because I had just as much of a chance to beat him as anybody, and it didn't happen. It didn't work out. So,
Jimmy, how much stuff can you cram into a 32-foot trailer?
Well, you can get the difference between my 32 and my 34 is the four-wheeler. And I know 2 foot doesn't sound like much, but it's an extra 6 inches taller. So you can get in a 34-foot trailer with the cabinets in front, you can get a 235-inch dragster and a four-wheeler and a junior dragster and a dart. All of that in there, and the generator and toolbox and all that stuff in its place. But yeah, you can flat load. And we have people come to the racetrack when we get when we're finished racing, and they'll come over and stand to watch us unload. And I got the biggest kick one day. We were at Harrisburg, and it's not too long ago, and Donnie Ellis was there, and his, you know, he's got his stacker, and you know, I'm pitted next to him with a 32-foot, you know, just 6 inches extra tall trailer. And Donnie, you know, opens the door to his thing and gets his, you know, rolls his dragster out, and then he drops down and pulls the top sportsman car out. I was like, well, I guess I better unload my stuff. So I roll the dart out, and then I get my dragster out, and his dad was standing there at the end of his trailer, and I looked at him and I said, you know what? I'm not going to get that junior out because that'll just be showing off. And he got the biggest kick out. He looked in that trailer. He said, how did you get all that in there? And I said, well, poor people have poor ways. And that's the way I've got to roll, you know, for me to be able to take all these cars to the racetrack with this truck. That's how I've got to roll. So yeah, it's, there's a lot of people know me for that. You know, I mean, I'm not the first one to ever do it. I seen Luke steck a dragster and a Vega in a 26-foot trailer that wasn't very tall. And he got him in there. And, buddy, when he went to the racetrack, he wreaked some havoc on people's lives. You know what I'm saying? So
that is who's telling us about it. He said the Vega was the dragster sport.
It was. I saw that. Yes, it was for sure.
So give us the what for of rolling in the gate at I-57, and you are you the James Terhune?
That is the first surefire way to get my wife to roll her eyes because you know, she didn't mean any more by that than, you know, I've seen your name, I've heard your name from people talking about you, and this is the guy, and that's nobody. I'm nobody, and I tell everybody that I'm nobody. I'm just a guy trying to make his world, and you know, trying to make his way in this world. And it was just perfect because I didn't need to say anything when I rolled in there. The way it came out, it was, this guy is somebody, and now I've met him, and I look at my wife and she is rolling her eyes. And you know, Leanne did not mean anything by that. By she just meant, you know, hey, I've heard your name before, I've never met you. And Jennifer says, that's because I'm the one that's always buying you back. And you know, we roll in the gate, and I look at Jennifer, she's rolling her eyes, and I look back at Lauren and I said, do they know you when you come in the gate? And she just rolls her eyes too. It was funny.
So one more I want to throw at you here, and this comes from our listener named Craig Duke, and I want to keep asking this question because I know that Craig really gets something out of it. I want to say thanks to him for listening. He just messaged me tonight, actually, saying he enjoyed hearing this from the last episode, and he's done that several times. So he is used to be in bracket racing, and he's getting ready to get back into it, start again this year. So he was asking us to, you know, ask our guests what advice that they would give to somebody that's been on the sidelines for a little while and is now going to get back into the sport again.
I would say, depending on what class he's going to run, practice tree. You know, we bought our first practice tree. Somebody gave it to me for Christmas. I don't know if it was Jennifer or somebody anyway. You know, and Jennifer is as competitive as anybody you'll ever meet. We get the practice tree out and hit it 50 times the first night. And we wasn't going to quit because we tied, went to 75. We were, you know, the 75 was the tiebreaker, I believe, because 74, we were still tied. So I'm going to say that the practice tree, you know, I really, you know, I could go on and on. Everybody's got their own favorites. They own the equipment they like to use. You know, Bill Bulkley does all my machine work, and you know, a good engine. Jeremiah Hall does really good work on transmissions. I build my own just because it's cheaper that way. And you know, the 800 horse or so combination that I have, I can maintain it. You know, good parts, and you know, the better your parts are, the longer and the more consistent your stuff is going to be. And I've learned that over the years. You know, some guys like Hoosier tires, some guys like Mickey Thompson's. I like used tires because they're cheap. You know, people have a hard time believing that whole 800 runs on a tire thing. And I tell them that, look, I got a 490 car, and when I can't do a burnout because it will not, you know, it just like rolls 2 foot and hooks in the burnout, I know I need tires. And it's usually around 800 runs on a set of tires. You know, I get away with it, but if I had another 50 horse, I may not be able to get away with it, you know. But my advice would be good ignition, good fuel pump, good transmission, good engine. You know, just the more parts you can put on that thing that are top notch, the better your program is going to be. But if you cannot get off the starting line on time, you might as well save your money. So a practice tree, even a practice tree app on your smartphone, which everybody has a smartphone. If you don't have a smartphone, then I don't know where you're from, because everybody I know has a smartphone. So, you know, even the practice tree app on your smartphone will get you to reacting. You know, I used to do it at the stoplights, and then that's what got me in trouble. And that's where I built the race car and, you know, down that road. So I'm just going to say practice makes perfect. You know, don't be afraid in your frustration to go ask the nicest acting guy that you see at the racetrack. Go ask him for advice, and you will be surprised at the advice he will give you. Now, you also may need somebody to filter it out, because he may be feeding you a line, which some guys did that to me back in the day. And you know, I give advice a lot, and some guys get mad because I give advice, and you think they're, you know, that guy's going to beat you because you're the advice you give him. I said, well, if he beats me, then I beat myself, so it doesn't matter. So, you know, that's the only thing I can say. Just the best equipment you can afford, and the most practice you can do, and you know, don't lose hope. I'm going to say, because you know, you're going to get out there and get thumped on by these guys pretty regularly until you get it figured out. But you never know; he might jump out there and pick right back up where he's been, and you know, strapping the 00 packages on people left and right. You never know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I've gathered from a lot of people that have given us a response on that. Is, you know, it's the old saying, you know, you fall down what, 9 times, get up 10. You know, it's going to be a battle of attrition for sure. Whenever you go down to you know, you're going to be thrown to the wolves. There's not a beginner super pro class if that's what you're going to try to end up doing. So a couple more questions here before we roll into our final round discussion that you're going to join us for. Has there ever been any drama around your parts about love calls after the finish line?
Yes. Yes, there have. Now, I will tell one story that a lot of guys don't know about, but I'll tell the story. And it was a really great guy. I don't really know him that well, but I know he's a good guy. And I love called him a couple of times after the finish line, because I, you know, get excited and whap, whap, you know. And boy, he stared me down. And I just looked at him and revved my motor. And, you know, that was the pre-cancer Jimmy. That was the bad guy Jimmy. You know, I was a bad person. I was a little full of myself for a little while. And, you know, that was probably the last round I'd won that night, especially because I just thought I was going to win it all. And I just couldn't win another round. So, you know, I was humbled enough to learn that that's not really a good thing to do. So the love calls are, that's a surefire way to get people upset and get them to your pit area. You know, another way to get them to your pit area is after you beat them, come by their trailer and whack the throttle a couple times. That's the surefire way to get to know what kind of pit vehicle they have, because they're going to put it in pit. So, you know, you want to watch that kind of stuff, you know. I'm a smaller guy. I try not to fight. So, I try not to fight. sometimes I get myself in over my head, but I try not to do that. So,
the fight finds you, huh?
Yeah, I try not to love call too much. There's been some drama at the racetrack with other guys love calling, and, one guy love calls in the middle of the track four or five times because he likes to pack a tenth, and I've never seen that work out for him. I'm sure it does at some tracks, but it doesn't work out whenever I see it. It never does work out, but some guys just like to love call. They'll dial up a few so they can love call a few times, and throttle whacking. It's definitely bad sportsmanship, and I've learned that over my years that it's not really good to do that. So I try to keep myself out of doing that, but there are some guys that'll do that, and do it pretty loudly, pretty handily. Some guys get their feelings hurt over that.
And on the notion that you said that some guys just like to dial up and whatnot, we've had Luke and Todd Bones Ewing on the last couple episodes, and they both said the same thing, that everybody's stuff is so good anymore that junk goes dead on, and there's no need to dial up 200 or 300s and take 20. That isn't the way it works anymore. And I think you figured that out quite a long time ago, and I think you attribute a lot of your success to that.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in A, you're running your lane, B, you're running your equipment. There's no reason to sandbag or to dial down. There's a couple of guys that, I get beat, I'm red or whatever, and I run, I'm mad. My foot's hanging out by the front tires, and I run it out, and the guy said, man, I at least I got to see what your car would run. And I'm like, dude, I most of the time I'm pedaling, at or past the finish line. So I'm actually running honest. I may pedal off 4 or 5 thou, but I'm usually dialed honest, and I'm running out the back door. And if you had a worse light than me, I may tell you about it. It's 158 feet or whatever, but most of the time I'm telling you about it at 665 feet. So, Richard always gives me a hard time, says you need to put your glasses on when you race. And I'm like, no, my reaction time is way too fast. And he's like, yeah, but at least you'll know where the finish line is. So that's I come up with this ticket. I'm like, yeah, I had him. And he's like, no, he had you, and he was whacking. And I'm like, well, he was under. So he didn't deserve to have it. So yeah, it was
that's one of those weekends that giving a little love call after the finish line works out best, is whenever Richard is near your pit area.
Oh yeah.
He has no problem tater punching somebody.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. yep. You're right.
So back to the trip where we all migrated south for the million, the first time we all kind of just went together. How lucky were we that Paco's wife decided she wanted a motorhome?
Oh my God, wasn't that wonderful? Thank you, Angela. You're listening, Angela. You are a saint for that. I'm so glad that, because I was going to be a trailer dweller. I was going to be, I probably would have went and got a 5 gallon bucket and took me a shower in the trailer somehow. But yeah, I was so glad that they bought that motorhome, because that sure made my life easier.
And I think it was like 100 degrees there every day that year. And we would have been some pretty ripe fellas if not.
Yeah, it was definitely hot the first year. And, I went down there with the intentions on winning enough money to run the million if I could. And luckily, Richard got two other people and himself together with 500 to put me in that race. And I was on a mission to get everybody their money back. And I pulled it off. I got beat fifth round, and that paid $2,000. And I give everybody their money back, and I got to run the million, and I'm glad for it. It was quite an experience. I got to beat, which I really feel bad about being happy that I beat him, because Luke is such a good guy, but I put a 1,000 package on him because he's Luke Bogacki. Right before I ran the last round, when I got beat that round of fifth round, I was running Jeggy, and I went up, shook his hand. I said, dude, I've got the most respect in the world for you, but I'm getting ready to strap it on you. And he laughed, and we had a little moment, and he said, well, I'm going to try to put it back on you. And he was 25-2 to the good. I was 008 red, dead 4. So I was just I just let Jeggy in the other lane get the best of me, because I just wanted so bad to beat him. Of course, I was so happy about going that many rounds. And that punk, I say punk, I love him to death, Lukey, goes to the semis. I thunder away. I was like, Lukey, if you weren't here, I was the guy. But no. Lukey takes her to the side, you know, gets $55,000 or something, you know, something crazy and a big check. And,
he didn't get the check. Remember, they flipped for it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. But I was there to watch him go through a bunch of heavy hitters. Okay. And I mean, he took out Folk. There were several big time hitters that he took out that weekend. He was on a roll that weekend. I think he got the Warrior Award or whatever for going the most rounds.
Yep.
I was just lucky enough to be in that race, and it worked out okay. As most people know, my life changed exactly 1 week later. I got a little wake-up call that I had a battle on my hands, and I'm thankfully still here to do that. But that motorhome really made life easier, and I went this year probably for the last time because it's just so hard on me that that's a marathon race, man. If you're if you're not able to be up for 36 hours straight, basically, we had no sleep, and we were just round after round after round, and the motor changed until midnight, and it's just, oh my God, it was just a weekend. It was a really this past million was a bad weekend all the way around for my pit area. Thank God Diane's okay. Poor Richard, he in a matter of 2 days. The only thing he had left was the trailer and the motorhome, and he sold those when he got home. So, he's starting over. God love him. If there's anybody that I'd ever want to lose a championship to, it would be Richard Duval, because, Richard's been through a lot too. And he is one of probably the nicest people. When he's your friend, he's probably one of the nicest people. Oh, yeah. And will do thing in the world for you. What a weekend that was, huh?
Oh man. Yeah. And Richard would be, he's not much of a personality like hop on here and talk with us, but man, if we could convince him and give him about a six pack of Coors Light before we came on, that'd be a heck of a conversation.
Well, you'd be beeping though. You'd have to get you a beeper.
Richard,
when Richard's had a few beers, he likes to use rated R words. So, which is fine, whatever, that's all good. You'd be beeping about, you'd be going crazy beeping and Richard with about six beers, you'll get the truth for sure.
Well, Jimmy, it's been great talking to you here in the interview portion, but we're going to kick it over to our In Motion Solutions final round discussion. And, this is kind of, Dragazine wrote an article about it today. I don't know what to call it, Greater Evansville Dragway, Chandler Motorsports Park, Movie Land, Speed Park, Presley Land. I don't know. It publicly went up for auction this week. And, the same day, Reno Fontana, which supposedly is purchasing the facility, says, don't worry, I've still got it all under control. And I'm not sure. Right. We're not going to turn this into a bash session, but
honestly,
a slap in the face to you, the Smitty family, the Baker family, the Harper family. I feel like this is just spitting in their face just a little bit more, because you guys have put your lives into that facility.
Well, but in the same sense though, Jake, here's my take on it. Reno, regardless of his past, regardless of what he's done, he wants to buy this racetrack. And for, as God is my witness, I want this to work out for him where he gets this racetrack and he breathes new life into this racetrack, because, I have invested my life at that racetrack, and Jonathan and Jeff Meese and Don Meese and Rose Meese and, Bobby Harper and the late Steve Bickle. And, all these people have put their life into that racetrack to try, to make it for the better. And Jonathan had some good years there, and Jeff had a lot of good years, and little Bob had a lot of good years there. We've had a lot of good years at that racetrack, and I want for that thing to go, but boy, it's really hard to see the circus that's going on about that whole situation and feel positive about how it's going to turn out. I just don't know what to make of it. I was in real estate for a matter of 2 years. I had a rental property, and that is enough to drive anybody insane. I can't imagine the paperwork that goes along with buying a facility that has liens upon it, and how that all, I don't know. I really wish them well, and I hope that they get it figured out. He'd named Jamie Knott the race director, and I told Jamie, you know, I tried to give some advice, and you know, I don't get mad anymore. I just give advice, and if it, they don't take it, then you know, I've got a home track, so I'm not looking for one of those. But that 1964 asphalt has done its job, and it's time for it to be replaced. You know, or you can't really roll a junior dragster around them pits. You know, there's pretty good sized potholes, but still, the place has got a base. It's a place that you know, the bleachers are brand new. The tower is fairly updated. You know, it wouldn't take that much. I say that much. It wouldn't take a whole lot more effort to make that place back to what it was, you know. And if he was to sink a little bit of money in it, you know, it would be, you know, back to its glory days, I think. But he's going to have to get some, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? People need to be able to believe him. Credibility. He doesn't have credibility right now. And I really hate that because, you know, the guy, he's got big hopes, big dreams. You know, I try not to bash. I try to sit back and watch. But, you know, it doesn't look good right now. It doesn't look good.
And you know, it's no secret. You know, last time I was there, how I felt about it, I made it publicly aware of how I felt about the current staffing of that place and whatnot. That's neither here nor there. But, man, I hope I eat crow. I hope that, you know, I want to say, hey, I'm going to race it, whatever it's called this week. You know, I can't wait to go down there or something along those lines, because back when, I don't know, I think Smitty was running, it was the first time I was there. I had a great time. I couldn't wait to go back.
Yeah. It's a good racetrack. Yeah.
And you know, you have guys like Jerry Hall that walk out there and say, hey, you know, if you're in the left lane, you need to be, you know, a tire and a half outside the left side of the groove, or, and you know, and the guys that have been there and doing it forever. And you're like, you know, whatever.
Or a half a fender further ahead than you think.
Yeah. You go out there and you know, you put it over there because you know the guy just told you to, and you're like, holy cow, it just worked.
Well,
I'm gonna throw my two cents in. I mean, I like Jimmy, and I think, you know, this was a good subject. I mean, obviously it came up, it's on, you know, it's going crazy on Facebook right now, everybody talking about it. But you know, having Jimmy on to talk about this, I thought was good, just because I know, you know, how much a track has meant to him and me, and how much, you know, it grew up there, and I want it to work so bad. You know, and it has been a circus. It's been unfortunate to watch all this stuff unfold. And you know, like, I don't want to get on the bashing side of it either at all. I just hope that, just like Jake said, seeing all the bashing going on over it, and I always thought, you know, what the heck, if the guy has a bracket race, you know, great, let's go. You know, there shouldn't be the rooting for it not to work. But you know, watching it from the outside has just been, it's been tough, and I really hope that they can get it back going. And you know, like the article said, I want to say, reading the Dragzine article written about it, if anybody hasn't seen it, Andrew Wolf, who also grew up racing junior dragsters there, wrote a great article covering everything that's going on. And you know, it's the property really isn't good for anything else. And that's a really good point. I mean, we all know it floods every single spring. It's gonna flood, and it's just a matter of how bad it's gonna flood. And you know, can't make it into commercial property. You can't build houses there because of that. You know, so it's really not, you know, it's, I really hope that it does get going, because the property really isn't good for anything else but exactly what it is. And and you know, the track itself, sure, it could use asphalt, could use updating, things like that. But you know, it could be used the way that it is. It could be made to work, you know, like Jimmy said, some minor things for a weekly bracket track, to get it back going. And then, you know, and then who knows, get the ball rolling and see what would happen after that. So I know I'll be watching very intently to see what happens. I believe the auction, I'm going to make sure I'm right here, I believe it's slated for, I know it's sometime in March. I think it's March 20th or something like
23rd,
that.
23rd, I think.
Yeah.
But so, you know, my side of it, sorry to cut you off, but
you're good.
My side of it is, I 100% don't agree with him selling lifetime passes,
mm-hmm,
at a discounted rate when the property is still up in tax liens or whatever it's in.
Right.
You know, that his credibility goes right down the drain whenever it gets posted that it's going up for auction and he's already sold X amount of lifetime pass.
That was my thinking too. You can't have that posted and expect to sell sponsorship and that kind of stuff. So you need some credibility. But who knows? Maybe he's a genius. and we're all stupid. So I don't know.
I hope so.
I've been called worse.
Yeah, I hope movie, you know, whatever it's called, if it's Movie Land and Pressy Land, Movie Land Speed Park, whatever. If it opens and they have a bracket race, you know, I would be happy to roll through the gates and write him a check and go down that track again. And I would like it, you know, I think about, you know, with especially with Lucas and, you know, the fact that probably be Junior Draxler in the future here on in my family before too much longer, to have a track that's close like that to go and you know, and have him learn how to race close to home and at the track that my dad raced at, that I raced at, that, you know, we won races and won championships at. There's all the memories. I just hate to see it just be over with. So I just hope that whatever happens, that there's racing in the future on that drag strip again.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, I think that's going to wrap up episode number 23. Jimmy, thanks for being a good sport about it. Mm-hmm. And thanks for sitting out in the truck the whole time so the dogs don't bark. We really appreciate that. It's not that big of a deal. I'm out in the shop,
sitting in the truck so the dogs don't bark and interrupt it. And I had the door shut in case the dogs needed to go outside. And my wife is a pretty good to me, and she is taking care of those dogs so that I can do this. So, you know, I'm a pretty busy guy. And when you text me about it, I was like, oh, I've got ball games. Henderson County is in the district playoff game this week, and I thought we had a game Tuesday and Wednesday. Turns out we had a game Tuesday, and I didn't have anything today, so it worked out pretty good.
Well, thanks so much for making time for us. We really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, Jimmy, and you know, obviously wish you nothing but luck in the future, buddy. I'm sure we'll lock horns more times, and I can't wait for it. It's always fun to race with you at the track.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much. Two of my favorite bracket racers in the world are you two, and I'm glad to be on the show. I was I think I mentioned on episode one, which really made me feel good. Mm-hmm. and then to be on the show makes me feel good too. So, you know, I can't say enough positive things about you guys. I'm really glad that your podcast is doing well, and like and share.
Yes, sir. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, and as far as you like bracket racing with us, you can stay the hell away. That'd be great. Take it easy, buddy. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you
around. All right, see you guys.
See you, Jimmy.
Bye.